Hello and welcome to the official Robcast podcast. I'm your host, Rob, and this is my podcast. Hello. Welcome to the 30th podcast, Robcast podcast. Couldn't have done it without me. I could have done it without you. Let's be honest, I'm just shouting into the void, aren't I? But that's okay. I have gotten feedback. And feedback provides encouragement. I'm at a hotel right now doing the podcast. I'm serious about this podcast. I brought the microphone with me to a hotel. I apologize that there was not a podcast last week. Last week was so busy for me. And, you know, I probably could have done it. I know that a lot of very successful, busy people do it, but I made a conscious decision and I said, you know, is this about me proving to myself that I can do it? Because I can prove it to myself without doing it. You say, yeah, I can do it. Or is this about my pride, my ego getting in the way? Ooh, what just happened there? I swallowed my words. You know, I was in a workshop all week, and this guy who was leading the workshop, he's probably in his 70s. He says, "Millennials don't know how to speak. They mumble. You can't understand anything they say." And I think to an extent he's right. I think that, you know, he says that we've lost spoken language because everyone's on their phones, everyone's got their head down and they're texting and they're emailing and this and that. And he's right. I mean, I think we have lost a lot of language vocally. I think that language has evolved on paper, or not even on paper, but written. You can't even say written, typed. You know, we've got emojis. Has it evolved or has it sort of devolved? Because the first written language, I mean, if we look back, we look at Egyptian hieroglyphics, or we look at cave person drawings. I said drawings because I thought it was funny, not because I thought it was correct. So it's an interesting thing, right? Language. I mean, you know, the fact of the matter is that millennials don't speak with the elocution that their elders spoke. We don't hold them to that regard. I don't know why. I don't know what was the disc that made it all shift. That's a tectonic reference for you. But what I do know is that, you know, it's slipping. Language itself, vocal language, is slipping. I went to a comedy show the other day after having the echo of that gentleman's, you know, he was like, millennials don't know how to speak. You can't understand them. And I went to this comedy show, and I was sitting in the second row. And I couldn't understand about a quarter of the words that the comedian said. Now, the first problem was that they weren't holding for laughter, which, come on, if you're a comedian, laughter is the best thing that you could get. Hold for the laughter. Let us enjoy the joke. And the second reason is because they ended up talking like this. Yeah. And then the other day I was walking down the street and there was this guy and he was like, "Hey, David, what's happening with it?" And it's not like Norm MacDonald doing it where he mumbles, but it's a complete conscious character choice and he understands that he's putting on a character, so he has to mumble but also be understood. It's laziness. It's a quality that, you know, it's almost insulting. It's saying, I don't have to meet you halfway. You'll have to come all the way to me. You know, it's like if you're 50 yards from someone and you go, "Hey man, can you come over here for a second?" They can't hear you. All they can see is that you're talking, and then they come closer. And you go, "What?" And you go, "Can you come over here?" "What? Can you come over here?" Until they come all the way to you, they're 10 feet away, and then you say, "Hey, can you go back over there and grab me a stapler?" Great. So what, does the world revolve around you and your mumble? What was that? I know that the actual filmmakers of this genre don't like the title. They don't think it's aptly named, but there's a genre of film called mumblecore, where the Greta Gerwigs and the Duplass brothers, and all these sort of, you know, it's a movement of, hey, let's just go out and shoot on the weekend and see if we can cobble together a film from that. And perhaps it's called mumblecore because this generation mumbles. I mean, we don't know how to effectively speak to each other anyway. We text each other. We don't call. I've always been a big proponent of calling. You know, unless someone is not able to take a phone call, I think that it's such a nicer thing for someone to be able to hear your voice and for you to be able to hear theirs. That way, there's a little bit less lost in translation. Now, let's break it down a bit. Language is in itself a personal reality. Yes, it is a set of agreed upon circumstances and words. We do agree that some words universally mean the same thing, right? Love. But what is love? Baby, don't hurt me. Don't hurt me no more. You knew I was gonna do that. But what is love? Love is anything. Love is anything. The interpretation of love is endless. It's limitless. The interpretation of limitless is limitless. You know, you can say words. And I think when we say words, we probably have a certain imagery along with those words. For instance, if I said the word barn door, you could have a very specific barn door in mind that you either saw when you were driving through Pennsylvania Dutch country, or you saw it on a postcard for a Norman Rockwell Christmas card, or you know, you've seen it in a cartoon, a Looney Tunes cartoon. I mean, I say barn door, and you have the color, the size, probably, you know, how it opens, probably has some pulley wheels on top, and it slides. It's probably about, oh, this is mine. I can't say it's probably. All I can say is mine is old red paint chipped away, exposing gray weathered wood. It's got white trim on it, but the white trim is peeling off, and it's got a big old iron handle on it, so you can roll it, and it rolls open. It doesn't touch the floor; it kind of floats off the floor or the ground, but it has one of those pulley, you know, like two wheel systems, a wheel and a track, I should say, on top, so you can easily open and close it. That's my version of a barn door, right? Very specific. The imagery jumps out at me. But what happens when we talk about language and I may have a negative connotation with a word, and you and I are having a conversation, and you say that word that I have a negative connotation with? Now, all of a sudden, you have triggered something in me that evokes a negative response without even knowing it, right? What if you said, hey, put on your shoes, but, you know, let's just say, for the sake of an argument, that there was a bully in school when I was five, in fifth grade, and he made me take my shoes off and I would have to run away from him while he chased me with my own shoes and tried to beat me with them, and then eventually threw them at me, right? So the word shoes is a trigger word for me of bully, of unsafe, of I need to run. And even if it's super subconscious, someone says, put on your shoes, you know, I revert right back to that place. I go, oh, shoes, that bully, you know. This is just all hypothetical, but it's very possible and probable. I mean, there's so many things that we don't understand, like, this isn't language, but I met this this guy. He was a contractor for the government, essentially for the army, and he was stationed in Afghanistan. And it was a really sad experience. I mean, every time I saw him, he was, he was, you know, inebriated. But I think it's because he didn't want to face reality. He said that every time he heard an alarm, he would panic slightly, because when he was in Afghanistan in the base, and an alarm would go off, it meant that a missile was being launched at their base, and they had to shoot an anti-missile device to get it. But there was split seconds, or even up to a minute, where everyone on the base didn't know if they were going to live or die when this alarm was going off. So imagine that. So now any alarm going off is going to trigger that response, right? It's and then the word alarm, because that's what the association that he has with it, right? So now we break this down. We've got two people, they're trying to have a conversation. Now when I say, hey, my alarm didn't go off this morning, maybe I'm thinking of a big cartoon alarm, like in you know, in Looney Tunes. I keep bringing up Looney Tunes because I think it's got such vivid imagery. But, you know, my alarm didn't go off. Oh, well, I think of one of those, you know, circular analog clocks with little feet and then the bells that go ding 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 with a little hammer that goes back and forth and the wind up on the back, right? That's a nice alarm. Or sometimes, you know, people just set alarms on their phones, so they've got phone alarms. Anyway, the point that I'm trying to make is that conversations are almost never going to be on the same page. Therefore, relationships are almost never going to be clear. Now, there might be a way around this, and the way around it would be to take the ego completely out of the conversation and say, well, that person doesn't know my imagery that I have. They don't know the negative imagery that I get when someone mentions shoes or alarms. So I'm not going to take it out on them because they don't know. Now, let's break it down even further. I say the color red. I know immediately what I see. I see a fire engine. I see the recording light on my microphone. I see the recording bar on the program for this podcast, right? For this recording program. You know, I see the red recording button. That's what I meant to say. I wasn't concise with my language. But who's to say that the red that I see is the same red that you see? Maybe the red that I see is a blue that you see, and the blue that you see is a red that I see. You see? I mean, who's to say that we see the same colors when we look at things? Who's to say that my red is your red? There's no way to prove it. The only thing that I can say is red. And red has emotional attachments to it anyway, right? Red, anger, passion, red, blood, life, death, red. You know, immediate, warning, red, fail, red. There's so many associations with colors, even the words of colors. And I think that it's weaving a tiny little thread in our subconscious each time we hear words. So are we on the same page as the person we're having a conversation with? My theory is that absolutely we are not. And we will never be. Now, could it be that we are all one? And, you know, if you break it down even more, everything is me. I mean, I'm creating this entire reality. Therefore, I create differences from other people to me so that I can differentiate, right? They look different. They sound different. They emote differently. They think differently. They act differently, right? So they see differently. They see a color red. They speak differently. I can't prove that theory either. But what I can say is that vocal language, the scientists, the expert scientists believe that vocal language is only about a quarter, maybe less, maybe 15 to 20% of all communication. And that most communication happens through the body. That way, when you see someone who's really connected to their body. Let's say that they're feeling an emotion, right? Let's say that someone's really angry. You can see that anger through their whole body. And when they speak, they're connected. Their mind and their body are connected. Therefore, their emotions are connected. They're breathing. They're all one. It's all one big energy coming at you, and it's anger. Now, someone can be intellectually angry, but they don't let that anger go below their neck, and they don't feel it. Therefore, it's inside their head. They don't allow their anger to be expressed. Therefore, the person sitting across from them may not know that they're even angry. It comes in that old trap, you know, the relationship. Where do you want to go for dinner tonight? Oh, it doesn't matter to me. It doesn't matter to me. Now, that's the start of a conversation that you know you're not going to be on the same page as. You know that there's no winning that conversation. It doesn't matter to me. Well, yes, it does matter to you. Maybe you don't know in this moment that it matters to you. Maybe you are assuming that the other person is going to take the reins and know exactly what you want, even if you don't know exactly what you want. Maybe you want to be pleasantly surprised, but it does matter to you because you don't want to go to McDonald's, or maybe you do. You don't want to go to Arby's or Burger King. You don't want to go to the Sizzler. You don't want to go to Red Lobster. You don't want to go to Long John Silver's, or maybe you do, but I'm guessing you don't. So if we're having this conversation and I'm guessing you don't want to go to those places, it's probably because I don't want to go to these places. So it doesn't matter to me. It's almost like a landmine question, I would call it. And it's a break in language. You're saying something, but there's subtext under it. And it's also much harder to really grasp what people want to say, because they don't say, most of the time, they don't really say what they want to say out of fear or respect or both or compassion or whatever it is. You know, a lot of things I don't say out of fear that the person I'm talking to will reject me, not reject what I'm saying, reject me, right? So a lot is riding on our language. If I say this person will reject me, so I don't want to say this. I'm going to say this instead because it's safe. Now, I think a lot of us operate in safe language, and that's where we probably got the term politically correct. Now, I don't exactly know what that means. I'm sure that it's easy to look up, but it's like saying, you know, African American as opposed to black, because we can't talk about the pigmentation of someone's skin color and be inaccurate with it. But guess what? We can call someone an African American, but we have no idea if they are or not. Just because we see someone with dark pigmentation walking around the United States of America does not mean that they're an African American. It could be that they're a Caribbean Canadian, which is the case with one of my friends. And, you know, calling them an African American is completely incorrect. They're neither. They don't have of any sort of United States citizenship, and they're not from Africa, right? Well, I guess if you really want to be, politically correct, then scientifically, if life began in Africa, then everything is African, right? So would you put that in front of everything, if that's where, I mean, I'm not saying it is, it may not be able to be proven, but I guess you see what I'm saying. We agree upon these terms because we don't want to feel rejected, whether it's rejected professionally, personally, emotionally, physically, whatever it is. You know, we know language can hurt, right? That's what Neil LaBute is trying to prove in a lot of his plays, that language hurts, like Reasons to Be Pretty. I mean, there are a lot of reasons that we bite our tongue or that we keep our mouth shut. So how does that translate? That gets even more complicated. And if you add on top of that body gesture, well, does body gesture lie? There are scientific studies that say that we subconsciously say what we want with our body while we say something else with our mind and our mouth. So, for instance, if someone is crossing their legs and their knee is facing towards you, it means that they want to exclude you from their conversation or from what they're feeling or from what they're thinking. If someone you're talking to at a cocktail party has their feet facing the doorway, it means they want to leave. They don't want to be talking to you, right? There's all sorts of interesting little body language things. I mean, there's this whole political thing where each political leader tries to, in photos at least, shake the hand of another dignitary or another leader, their hand needs to be closed, because if they have their hand open-palmed, it's a sign of weakness. Therefore, it could, you know, send an unconscious message saying, our country is weak, our leader is weak, attack us. And it's like, these things are so thought after. And then there's also the, I'm holding the door for you. No, I'm holding the door for you. I mean, political leaders quabble over this. If you see footage of these things, you know, I believe there was a, who was it? Yasser Arafat and Bill Clinton. They did this amazing dance of, no, let me hold the door. No, let me hold the door. And then you pushed him through, and then he twirled around, and then he held the door, and then he let, you know, his wife go through, and then this. It's fascinating, right? But none of that is spoken. None of that, you know, you can't say what you really think. You can't say, hey, go through the damn door. I want to show that I'm powerful and you're not. No, of course not. It's called tact. It's called elocution. I mean, I could synonymize the whole thing, but really, it may not get any closer to what we're talking about. And I also think that, you know, people speak in metaphor because they think that it's easier for other people to grasp it, right? When, for instance, I was just listening to a podcast. What was it? I believe it was The Hidden Brain. Why do we name hurricanes? Why do we name big storms? Why do we personify these things? You know, these negative things. Why don't we personify great things that happen, like, you know, the sun? Like, why doesn't the sun have a name? You know, Charles Rosenfeld today without incident. You know, the clouds, I guess you could say, you know, name the clouds. The fact is, in through mythology, through other cultures, we have named these things. We have named them different things. We have personified them. But it's interesting that we go, that we only, in this culture, we only name these big negative storms, and we only, and the hurricanes, right? You don't name a tornado. You don't name a thunderstorm, right? I mean, hurricanes, Katrina. We hear Katrina, and we have vivid imagery of what Katrina means to us, right? Especially if you lived in New Orleans, you have vivid imagery. Now, that becomes something that, what if you have the beautiful name of Isis? And I know a few people, they named their daughters Isis, and it's a beautiful name. But now, the Islamic State has sort of, you know, made that name, they've tinged it with a negative quality. And the imagery that pops up when you say the word Isis is not of a beautiful little girl. It's of extremist, Islamic terrorists. The other thing is, I'm sure in the 1800s, and maybe early into the 1900s, the name Adolf was just a name. And maybe it still is in Germany. Maybe Adolf is still just a name. But you hear the word Adolf here in the United States of America, you think of the Holocaust. You think of terrible things. You think of the Nazis. You think of awful, awful things. Just that one name, Adolf, right? So language can be burned in a way. You say, well, I can't use that word anymore because it is now offensive to people, right? Just like slurs and epithets that one might use in the 50s, you can no longer use in the 2017s. Absolutely not. You know? And then there's all these words that you have to use for how people identify themselves. You know, oh, my identity is through this. You have to say the correct words and the correct, chain of words. Otherwise, it could be offensive. Or you can't leave anyone's identity out. You can't say it in the incorrect order. You know, there's all these sort of unwritten rules. But let's get back to the basic point of language. It's to communicate. Well, I don't know if anyone's seen the movie Arrival, but I'm going to sort of spoil it a little bit, so this is a warning. If you have not seen the movie Arrival and you want to see it, then don't listen to the next minute of this podcast. Aliens come down and they try to communicate with the human race. Now, the movie was flawed and ridiculous and Hollywoodized, and I don't care if the people who liked it say, but it was great, whatever, it was fine. It was a Hollywood movie, end of story. But the interesting thing about it was that these aliens were communicating in a language that we had never seen before, we had never known. And the way they end up in communicating is through these sort of three-dimensional ink blots, where they kind of have these ink, like they spray ink into the air, and it creates these complex patterns. So we look at that and we say, okay, this is an advanced language. This is an advanced species or whatever you call. These are advanced beings that have come to our planet and understand how to communicate and are assuming that we can then communicate with them. But the way we communicate is vocally and, you know, through written language with words, right? That's how we communicate. We translate words. I mean, if I read a Pablo Neruda poem in English, it would not have the same effect. I guarantee it would not have the same effect as if I were to read it in Spanish, in his native tongue in which he wrote it. Isn't that funny that I say native tongue, even though we're talking about written words? But I say that because I believe poetry is meant to be spoken out loud, the way that it feels in your mouth. Certain words, and even moving your mouth in a certain way, you know, like when we talk about onomatopoeia, when we go beep, beep, it's personifying that sound. There's lots of words that sound like what they are, probably because originally we were acting out the our response to the imagery that we see, like water. It's a very liquidy word, I think. But you know, stand sounds like stand. It's certain. It's like I'm standing. So there are a lot of, you know, words that I believe when spoken, they then elicit the response. But I do believe we have to hear them or we have to say them ourselves. Otherwise, we're just reading them and we're only getting about half of the intended communication in the first place. Poetry is meant to be read aloud. Plays are meant to be read aloud, you know? Novels, I don't know. I would think that they would be meant to be read aloud. I mean, I would much rather listen to one than read one, but that might just be me. Maybe that's the way that I like to receive information, because I'm more auditory than I am visual. I don't know. But what I do know is that this is a subject that we could go on and on about, and we wouldn't necessarily get anywhere, because there's a universality of language, but there's also a very definite specificity, and the specificity of it is that my theory is that it's completely unconnected, but because we associate certain words with other words and we free associate like that, that we understand what we're talking about. And even if someone else strings along a series of sentences, we grasp what we grasp from it. And it may not be their intended point, but we grasp what we grasp from it, right? I mean, there's the whole, the terrible phrase, those four words, we need to talk. Well, societally and historically, we need to talk is what people say to their partner in a relationship when they want to get out of that relationship. We need to talk. It's never a good thing when you say we need to talk. I need to talk to you. I think that that's a little less, but it's still scary. I'd like to talk to you. That is still scary because it's vague. Hey, I'd like to discuss something with you. okay, that gets a little less scary, but it still keeps you wondering, well, what? Let's get into specifics. Hey, I want to talk to you about what happened the other day. Uh-oh. Let's Rolodex what happened the other day. What happened the other day? Hey, I'd like to talk to you about dinner tonight. Oh, dinner tonight. Great, okay. That means that it's something in the future. It's something that they're thinking of planning. They want my input in it. Okay, sure, what about it? Where do you want to go for dinner? Oh, it doesn't matter to me. Thank you. That's all the time we have. We're going to end it right there.
Well, that's all the time we have today at Robcast Podcast. Be sure to tune in every week to find the latest Robcast Podcast at officialrobcast.podomatic.com. And, of course, you can follow us on Twitter at officialrobcast. Thanks so much for listening. Stay alive.